hear those dance beats? That means the Jam with Manlisher hour is over. Sounded more like a technical difficulties hour, actually, a lot of the time. Hear those dance beats? That means the Jam with Manlisher hour is over. Sounded more like a technical difficulties hour, actually, a lot of the time.
Hello, my name is Jam Hazel with Manlisher hour is over. I'm speaking on behalf of the Peterborough chapter
sounded
of Hoops
like
International
hour,
to tell you that you're
time.
Listening to Trent Radio, 92.7 FM. I'm speaking quality programming for the Peterborough community. Oh, turn that music down, please. Turn that music down, please. It's hurting my ears. Turn that music down. Excuse me, I said that was hurting my ears. For the love of God, turn that down. Turn that down.
Now, we're hoping for Art Space and Noise Space to be coming up next, but Wayne hasn't made his appearance yet. Good afternoon. You may notice that I'm still here. I'm going to be filling in the Art Space, Noise Space program today, as Wayne Elliott is away at the Peterborough Library running a giant video projector. So, I'm going to talk about... a little bit about the show.
That was funny. I just picked that previously recorded show at random.
But first I have to browse the website and make sure I've got my facts straight.
A little bit about the show.
That was funny. I just picked that previously recorded show at random from Toronto. But first I have to browse the website and make sure I've got my facts straight.
A little bit about the show.
That was funny. I just picked that previously recorded show at random from Toronto. First, I have to browse the website. Make sure I've got my facts straight.
A little bit about
that was funny. I just picked that list
previously recorded show at random.
First, I have to browse the website. Make sure I've got my facts straight.
A little bit about
that was funny. I just picked that list previously recorded show at random.
I'm
Good afternoon there, girls and boys. It is Web Madman here for another week of Art Space, Noise Space, Web Madman, whatever, strangeness.
What was that stuff we were listening to?
I am not sure. You're the one that put it on, and wow, that was crazy.
That was great.
Yeah, yeah.
I think possibly it's this guy called Yoshi Wada. I looked him up. I downloaded him some months ago, and I haven't listened to it since. I didn't know I still had that recording.
That's always fun. You know, kind of accidental favorites.
Happy discovery.
Yeah. Ooh, that's so squeaky. Well, as I said before we brought up the mics, today I wanted to talk a little bit about the Creative Commons license, which...
Yeah, we'll start with a short capsule description of what it entails.
Okay, well, the Creative Commons license is an augment to the copyright. Now, all of my work is released under the Creative Commons.
Right.
And there's different types of Creative Commons licenses. And what they allow is for the artist who owns the copyright to allow people to use their work in certain ways. In the case of the license I use the attribute non-commercial, which means that people can share it as much as they like, copy it for personal use, but if they use it somewhere, they need to give credit, and they can't use it commercially without making an agreement with me.
Right.
Which makes sense to me.
Sure. now the could end up in a soundtrack for a film or...
Right. And
or anything.
Or anything. And if it's commercially released, in other words, if it's generating in money, then they need to contact me and, you know, compensate me.
Sure.
Which, to me, again, makes sense. A few years ago, my friend Lester sold a short film or licensed a short film to the CBC Television. And it had one of my pieces in the soundtrack.
Right.
And so each time it got played on the air, i.e. it was used commercially, I received a royalty.
How much?
Well, it was only a minute long, and I got, I think, $40.
Each time?
Each time it got played.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. Although, I mean, it was an interstitial that they used, I think, about once every 6 months.
Right.
For about a year and a half. So.
Three times.
But at the same time, I mean, for me, it's exactly how SOCAN, which is who I was compensated through,
should work.
That's how they're supposed to work.
That's how they're supposed to work. Now, what I wanted to raise today is that the latest issue of, what is it, Words and Sounds or something like that? Anyway, SOCAN's member publication has one of their lawyers warning people away from the Creative Commons.
And why is that?
Well, digging through his lawyer speak, which, as we've, you know, anybody with experience with lawyers knows that it can be thick as a brick.
Right. And terrifying, too.
But basically, it's because SOCAN has been trying to push through monetization of a lot of other things that I actually don't agree with. One of the things was Tariff 22, which would... well, there's multiple layers to it, but one of the layers that I vehemently disagree with is basically that if a radio station such as Trent Radio streams their radio signal online,
right,
they would have to pay a minimum of, I think it was like $200 a month? Retroactively to however long. Now, they first put this thing, this proposal forward in 96. So... so
it's
it would
been
be
stalled for a long time,
right? But it would be retroactive to whenever. Now, there's a lot of speculation that it's probably not going to go through, but it indicates to me an aggressiveness in terms of what SOCAN is doing, and it's something that I don't agree with. That's what this lawyer was basically trying to say: that if you release your stuff under the Creative Commons, then you're not eligible for certain payments, including the Tariff 22 and other things that they want to put into place.
All right, but they're not in place yet, so you don't actually lose anything.
No, not as such, although there is the private copying levy, which anytime you buy a blank CD or blank media in Canada, there is a tariff on it.
Yeah, well, I resent that like hell.
Right.
Paying money to U2's lawyers when I want to record some of my own music.
That's right. And part of that is that the way that they distribute the money that they get from that levy is based on the national playlists of radio stations, which I think is completely bogus. But mainly because I don't think that the what's being played on mainstream radio is necessarily what people are burning onto their blank media.
No.
No. So, I mean, in and of itself, it's problematic. Now, the Conservative government has said that they're actually going to remove that levy, which seems like a good thing.
What's the catch?
What the catch is that in some ways that levy has prevented people from being sued for private copying of files. And so,
okay, so
there's this...
Now, people who are privately copying...
Right.
Pirating.
Pirating, as they say, which...
I mean, making a copy for yourself to put in your truck.
Right.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Still should fall under fair use.
It should. Now, there's other layers to it called anti-circumvention. And other schemes that basically make it so that there's a lot of files that are locked. If you buy something from iTunes, it's locked, and you can't actually copy it around. This is the digital rights management systems that they've been putting into place.
Right.
And there's laws in place that basically say that if you circumvent those locks, that you can be charged. So even in uses... such as private copying in that way, they are still trying to get their fingers in there.
Right.
At any rate, the flip side of this is that distributing my music online through the Creative Commons license allows me to, without any loss on my part in terms of if I were to give somebody a CD, well, the actual material cost of that CD comes from my pocket in order to give it to somebody.
Sure.
Whereas if I were to share it online, each copy is not coming from anything that I'm putting out. I'm not losing anything, quote unquote.
You're giving anything.
No, I'm well, not giving not, anything
you're not
physically.
Spending anything.
That's right. There's no loss to me. And particularly with websites such as Jamendo, which I've mentioned before.
Right.
All of the music on there is released under the Creative Commons. It's how they allow the music to be shared online. They do, however, have, and this is one of the first hurdles that I ran into, other payment schemes where they are in touch with various television stations, movie producers, etc., and want to allow people to have their stuff available for that and be compensated for it if it's used commercially.
Right, so Jamendo is not just a network, but it's an archive as well?
It's an archive, yes, exactly. And it allows, basically, the mandate is to allow music to be moved around in a way where people can be exposed to it and have access to it. And promotion. It's all sure. about promotion. And to me, this is a way of promoting my music in a way that is minimal cost to me, but allows me the greatest amount of exposure. Now, when I went into the Jamendo kind of profile, it actually warned me that there are certain collection organizations, SOCAN being one of them, that being a member of, discludes you from being able to participate in some of these things. Yeah. So I'm digging into that, but... needless to say, there's the latest SOCAN member survey is out right now, and I will be filling that in the next couple of days and letting them know exactly how I feel about all of this stuff. Uh-huh. Because I'm really not happy with this, but they're the only game in town in terms of, you know, being compensated for commercial use of your music or art. And that's annoying.
Sure. They should. Why should they have a monopoly like that?
That's right. Now, the other side of it that I wanted to talk about is the revolution that's happening in terms of the Creative Commons. There is one very high-profile artist right now, Nine Inch Nails, who has released his last few albums under the Creative Commons.
Without... a record label?
Without a label. That's
they're,
right.
They're available for download only?
You can purchase it still, like the actual physical copy, and this is...
Right. So he's had them privately pressed rather than going through a label.
That's right. That's right. He's done all of that kind of work that the label would normally do himself, mainly because the label would not allow him to release his music under the Creative Commons. And I think that this is one of the things that I think might actually be, quote-unquote, good in the long run, in that I think it's the way in which the labels are starting to kill themselves.
Right.
There's because I think more and more people are becoming very disenfranchised with purchasing music in the traditional way. And I think it's because... we've been ripped off for too long, and we're starting to get really peeved about it. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that when you buy an album by an artist that is on a major label, that artist is getting an extremely small percentage of the profits from that sale. Now, in exchange for that, in the past, it's been about, well, the label does all the promotion and all of these sorts of things. So there was a real and direct reason for signing with a label because...
Right, but they also have some creative accounting.
Oh, yeah.
I saw this in an article by Steve Albini.
Yep.
And it was just a hypothetical example of what happens to a band that's been newly signed.
Yep.
But he showed how easy it is to finish a tour and owe the record company money.
Yep.
No matter how much they make off it.
Yep. No, and that's and those these are some of the issues that are really salient. And it's when I start to hear labels and organizations like SOCAN, which are very much under the thumb of the major labels, spewing this stuff about for the rights of the artist. As an artist, I want to protest. I want to say, this is not representing me. This is representing a completely different interest group. So what I would like to encourage people to do is actually to not pirate music, i.e., going to the peer-to-peer networks and downloading, you know, artists that are on labels that really are saying, don't copy our music. So it's like, okay, I won't copy your music.
I won't buy it either.
That's right.
So there.
That's right. Rather than that, I would recommend people go to websites such as Jamendo, or just do a search for Creative Commons, and find musicians, artists that are putting their music out there and support them.
Right. Well, previously that would have been a pretty obscure thing to hunt around.
That's right.
I mean, it's a lot more available, a lot more well known.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years.
Yes.
Or so.
Yeah.
So now with Jamendo, that's an archive.
That's right. And then there is archive.org, which
also contains a lot of, copyright-free material, isn't it?
Or Creative Commons. They have a great deal of their work on there under the Creative Commons or public domain.
Really? Audio and video?
As well.
Creative Commons?
Yep. My own stuff is on there. That was, because they were the first game in town in terms of uploading in that way. That was when I first started using the Creative Commons licensing.
I thought archive.org.
Yeah.
I thought they were mostly educational films, documentaries, stuff that's gone into the public domain.
That's where they started, particularly the Prelinger Archive.
Right. Okay.
Which is a part of archive.org. Archive.org also has this amazing thing called the Wayback Machine, which you can actually go back to versions of websites. That have been archived.
Seen in years.
Yeah. So you can pick a website, go to the Wayback Machine, type in the URL, and you'll get, a list of all the previous versions of that page. It's kind of trippy, actually.
Yeah.
But it's this whole thing of trying to create an information plenty kind of situation where information is freely available, it's flowing around, and it's accessible to anybody, so that there's, of course, technological barriers, and then if you don't have a computer and access to the net, you're not getting there.
Right.
But with those things in place, there's no monetary barriers, etc. So I would actually, like I said, recommend to people that they bypass the whole pirating thing, and just start going and connecting with artists that are actually saying, yes, let's go to the future.
No.
Because as an example that I mentioned earlier of Nine Inch Nails, the first album that he released under the Creative Commons was as actually a series of albums called Ghosts. And at the same time that he released the digital files for download, he also had a limited edition box set for sale, which sold out within the first day.
Well, people are always going to want the
physical
package,
thing. That's right.
Yeah, the artwork.
Yep.
And you can also download all of the artwork and the packaging and
and
burn your own.
If you want.
Sure.
Exactly. But, I mean, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of eliminating the financial barrier, right? Where if you're somebody that cannot actually afford to, in this world, in this day in time, that's an increasingly common situation.
Uh-huh.
And I flash back to when I was in high school and I'd hear a great song. I'd go out, I'd buy the album, spend, the $15-$20 on the album, get home, and it's the only song on the album that's worth listening to.
That's too bad.
Well, it used to be a primary marketing technique, I think.
Yeah.
But now you can listen and choose, and then when you do have the money and you do have the incentive to go out, you know what you want to buy.
Right. And people who do download stuff free,
yeah.
if they can afford to, if yeah. they're impressed with something, they'll yeah. they'll send the money anyway.
That's right. And that's actually one of the things
something I would welcome.
Yeah. And on the Jamendo, again, there's ways that you can actually donate to artists. Pretty much
like PayPal or
well, there's actually support this artist. And I think there's a number of different payment schemes. Yeah, I can't really, I'm not going to click right through it right now.
Did that say 12,000 albums?
Yes. There is, at this point, actually 13,061 published albums.
Wow.
There's almost 70,000 reviews. Whoa, that's a big number. Almost... just shy of a half million
members.
Yeah. So there's everything you can possibly imagine on here, really. It runs the gamut from one end of the spectrum to the other. And you'll notice that down we're at the bottom of the Jamendo page, and there's a site map, and there's specifically a section called professional use. And that's where you can, you know, plug into advertising, music licensing, etc.
Right.
That's
there's also, let's see, members.
Yeah.
Community. So there are forums.
Yep.
Developer areas.
Yep.
Where you can exchange technical information.
Yet, as well as the Jamendo site itself is a dynamic site. It's Web 2.0.
Right.
And so it has an API, an application... I can never remember what that stands for, but basically ways to interface with your own software with the Jamendo website.
Your own music software?
It can be software that's embedded into a website, so
right.
you can actually pull up little Jamendo corner on your website and have a little sort of like playlist or whatnot.
Right.
So you can actually plug into the site, pull parts of it into your site, or have programs. There's one of the pieces of software that they actually offer themselves is the Jamendo Uploader, which is a software you can run on your machine that just streamlines the upload process. You can do it through the website as well, in sort of the same way that you do with YouTube or any of those sites. And their Jamendo Uploader is open source, so you can actually download the source code
And tweak it to
tweak
perfection
it or to however you want
it.
Exactly. So it's this spirit of openness, but at the same time recognizing that you know, artists need to make a living, and so allowing for that and putting things in place that will, you know, help
sure
facilitate that.
Well, this makes it easy. I mean,
yeah,
you rather than hunting down the person's address and
yeah
trying to send them, you know, 50 cents in the mail or something.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. No, it just streamlines the process and allows artists to connect with an audience.
Right. But I love the way that people will donate.
Yeah.
You know, if they've got lots of money.
Yeah.
It's not a problem to them.
Yeah.
Like at the conference, Hackers on Planet Earth.
Yeah.
After the seminar on hacktivism.
Yeah.
Which included Mark Hosler from Negative Land.
Oh yeah.
And Trademark G from the Evolution Control Committee.
Cool.
And I went back to the table and bought a whole bunch of their newer albums that I hadn't seen before.
Oh, nice.
And this guy walked up, he had $80, and he hands it to the cashier and says, here, give 40 to Negative Land and 40 to Evolution Control.
Nice. Well, yeah, and I mean, that's a major part of it, is that organizations such as the RIAA, the Recording Industry of America, something or other, they have a very sort of negative view of the audience. They see it.
Yeah,
they see their
that.
Audience as something that needs to be controlled and needs to be forced to do what they want. And that's why they're trying to put in all of these things where you have no choice, where
right.
you have to do it their way. It's an older way of doing things, I think. I'm hoping. that we're moving towards something that's a little bit more malleable and flexible and easily accomplished. But as it is right now, it's, I think, right now up to the artist to strike out and find new business models, new ways of doing things.
That's being done.
That's being done, exactly. And then for the audience and people that enjoy music to start seeking out ways to connect with artists that are actually embracing them, that are actually trying to connect with them, that don't feel like they need to force you to pay them through, you know, kind of draconian means. Now, one of the things, the undercurrents to all of this is my own belief that the flow of digital information is not something that needs to be monetized. That the monetization of digital information has profound implications, because in order to implement that type of system, it enables other systems that can basically censor the internet. I mean, this is one of the undercurrents to this whole thing, is to implement control systems that are actually going to start to fence in some of the openness that we're seeing with the internet right now, which I think is a good thing. And I think that the openness is actually facilitating a lot of very amazing grassroots types of things to start happening, and has increasing, like, exponentially been happening, where small grassroots organizations are able to network in ways that they never could before.
So has anyone done a projection of when
singularity happens? No.
Yeah, when Creative Commons overtakes all other forms of copyright.
Well, as I said before, and this is something that Lawrence Lessig, who's the lawyer that actually initiated the Creative Commons, he is very clear about the fact that the Creative Commons does not replace copyright. It augments it.
Right.
And so as an artist who's released my stuff through a Creative Commons license, I still retain the copyright. I've simply put in place ways in which to augment it, augment that ownership.
So if you want to protect your copyright, though, for commercial use, you still have to register with SOCAN. Is that right?
No, actually, in Canada, as soon as you create something, you have a copyright on it. It is automatic. Now, there are ways to ensure that. There's things like, as they say, the poor man's way of doing it, which is to use registered mail in order to
mail
get
a copy to yourself.
That's right.
So that if you ever have to prove it in court.
That's right. And that's not necessarily creating the copyright. It is merely
protecting it.
Protecting it and validating it. Creating a way that you can, as you say, show the date. Right? So it's like,
right,
I copyrighted it at this point. And so that somebody years down the road can't say, oh, no, I came up with this then. And, you know, so anyway. But the copyright itself is something that, as an artist, as soon as you create something, you do own the copyright. That's a something that was implemented a while ago, it's something that is a Canadian thing.
Only in Canada?
No, not only in Canada, but I know that in the U.S. in particular, there is an actual copyright registration office that you need to register with.
That's, you have no other option in the States.
You have to do that in order to, you know, secure your copyright. Now, again, I mean, that's U.S. law, so I'm not as interested and don't know it as well. But but I do know that in Canada, as soon as you create something, you have the copyright on it. And so then from there, you can transfer that copyright. And so...
So, yeah, you could give it away, or you could sell it.
That's right. Or
license it for a specific use.
That's right. Or here's the other thing, and this is how many artists over the years have been ripped off, is that if you are working for somebody and you have signed an agreement, then they own the copyright.
As in record labels.
That's right. Now, this is something that's happened more so with medias like comic books.
Right.
There's a lot of artists that have created characters, and but they don't actually own it. Because
they were working for hire.
That's right. And so it's the company that owns it. So those are the ways in which you can actually give up your copyright or your, you know, transfer your rights to somebody else. And
I think giving up is a good word for it.
Yeah. Now, and so, like I say, I mean, this is the other side of it, is that it is there's a window here that's open that I think is allowing artists to, if we step up and hold our ground, to be able to find a new way of moving stuff around, of self-promotion, of connecting with an audience.
Right. Well, I was just also thinking about some of the troubles you can get in with a record label.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if they own the copyright,
yeah,
they have they can sell it to for a jeans commercial,
yep,
or a movie soundtrack.
That's right.
You know, whether you
want it or not.
Yeah.
That's right.
Rise Up. You remember that song?
Yep.
The Parachute Club?
Yep.
It's a gay pride anthem.
Yep.
And it's being used to sell orange juice, and there's nothing the band can do about it.
That's right. Yeah. No, I do remember that. What's the lead singer of that band? Because, I read an interview where she was not happy about that. Which makes sense. I mean, it's you know, like, especially in that case, because Parachute Club, even though they had a very, they were poppy sounding,
yeah,
but they were very political. Their lyrics were just like quite cool. I remember when they were first huge, and visiting my hippie neighbors,
right,
and being turned on to the Parachute Club, and and it's sad. The other thing that is a problematic is that if the label owns your recordings, then they determine if it's re-released or not.
Yeah, they've, let's see. Bowie had some trouble with the record label.
Mm-hmm.
He'd made some albums that were artistically very successful, but
right,
they didn't sell too well.
Right.
So they actually kept a large part of his back catalog hostage,
right,
until he gave them some hits.
Right.
And once they got the hits, okay, they'll re-release them. That's hideous.
Well, you see, and it's just the sort of stuff that we need to get past, right? And
right,
and if people really want to start talking about the rights of artists, that's, to me, the front line.
Or another nasty example is Neil Young.
Mm-hmm.
Did an album that was a bit of a departure from his, yeah, usual. Well, he does that every few years.
He's pretty reinventing kind of guy.
His record label sued him for not producing a Neil Young sounding album.
Oh,
now, what the hell does that even mean?
That's funny. But I can totally see that coming from the, you know, executives at a label. You know, like that totally makes sense to them. You know, as draconian and backwards as it seems to us.
Mm-hmm. They're twisted.
They're twisted. Well, they have a very specific mandate, and that is profit, period, you know. And that
right,
really is, you know, they're the ones that will say the bottom line, you know. Like, that's their, you know, show me the money and all that nonsense.
Yeah, but more and more they claim
to
be offering a creative control.
Yeah. Well, within very...
Well, within certain...
parameters.
Bounds,
Now, you know, push those edges. And I think that this is the other thing, too, is that it's become yet another marketing ploy, right? Mm-hmm. And so you end up with these, you know, artists that are going, oh, yeah, the label gives us complete creative control. And it's like, well, it's in their own best interest to say that. Because, you know, what are they going to say? We didn't make the album we wanted because the label wanted something more poppy? Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. We shot ourselves in the foot because we didn't know what we were doing.
Right.
And now they own us.
Right. No, they're not.
I wouldn't brag about something like that.
No, and it's not going to help record sales either.
Yeah.
Right.
The Dead Kennedys' first album was a big seller in England. It was where it was first released.
Mm-hmm.
And Warner Brothers wanted to sign them.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, well, we got to have creative control.
Oh, yeah.
So they said, oh, you can have all the creative control you want as long as you change your name.
Bah! That happened to one of my favorite bands when I was in like grade nine, was the Paolas.
Right.
Which they ended up having to change because it was actually Dick Clark who said that they would not be allowed to be on American Bandstand if they, with that name. So it wasn't actually the label that time, but still something part
that's
of that.
Odd.
Yeah. Well, because Paola, of course, was, you know, being paid to be on the radio, and
yeah.
So it's a dark corner of the industry that they don't want any light shined on whatsoever. Because of course the art of Paola has now just been, it hasn't gone away, it's been streamlined.
It's been made a bit more subtle.
Yeah. And you know, go to the local channel, like radio stations that are Clear Light. Is that the name of that radio conglomerate?
Clear Light? That's a misuse of the term.
Clear Channel or something like that. At any rate, any of these major radio stations, if you're a local band, go to them and try and get your stuff played on their station. It's not going to happen.
No.
And, you know, they have very strictly regimented playlists that come from a national kind of stance and is bought and paid for by the labels, which is why mainstream radio is so awful to listen to.
Yeah.
As we've talked about, it's the whole lowest common denominator thing, in order to appeal to the broadest possible audience. And
yeah, well, a lot of lowest common denominator things, you end up with something that doesn't really excite anyone. It doesn't. It's nothing special.
No.
That anyone is going to really, really enjoy and be changed by.
No.
But it doesn't really offend anyone.
That's right.
And that's, well, yeah. It's kind of a from the artistic standpoint, that's an ass backwards way of doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's
but
a.
For
it's
making
a,
money.
Yeah. It's a study in mediocrity. And yeah, it's all about, you know, the units, selling widgets. Mm-hmm. Even with widgets, I mean, the manufacturing sector in North America is completely gutted and been, you know, outsourced to places where there's, you know, less unions, less, you know, regulations, and so therefore a cheaper product.
Right.
And
if you can flush your mercury and toxic waste down the toilet or just dump it in the river.
That's right.
You save a lot of money that
way. That's right. That's right. And so we, even outside of the creative stuff, we're still running into these, you know, layers and layers of issues where the bottom line mentality is pulling us in some very negative directions and making things very hard for most people. This is where, you know, the other side of it is, like I said, it's up to us as individuals to start looking in our immediate environment to see ways in which we can sort of value things in ways that aren't predicated on money. And I think that's, you know, that's a big thing for me.
Well, trading and sharing is a big part of it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's happened before in creative scenes, like in the Haight-Ashbury.
Yep.
A lot of small independent record labels came up then.
Yep.
And in the punk scene in England.
Yep.
People were didn't feel that the mainstream of culture or anything that was easily available to them just didn't meet their needs.
Right. It wasn't speaking to them.
You got to make your own.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and I think that's what's happening. And then, I mean, on top of that, we're in a very unique situation right now where the tools, I mean, you can make a killer sounding album on your laptop.
Right.
You know, it's become very, very accessible, which is, I think, pretty cool.
Yeah, you could buy a whole entire recording system for your home.
Yeah.
Some power monitors, headphones, a couple of decent microphones.
Yeah.
And you'll spend
a fraction.
What, you know, you could probably get about 2 hours at a major studio.
If
with that kind of money.
No, I know. Yeah. No, it's true. And I think that this is, you know, where, you know, we can
start a revolution, baby.
No.
Well, and in point of fact, as you've just mentioned, it's not starting a revolution, it's continuing one. That's been ongoing.
Right.
And as people get access to the resource to do their own thing, they're going to do it. And that's a good thing. And that's where, like I said, myself, as both an artist and a quote unquote consumer, I'm personally looking at ways to take the power back, and you know, find the beauty in the small. Even though, I mean, a site like Jamendo is actually quite huge in certain respects. But it's certainly... oh, that's right, too.
Spooky.
DJ Spooky is...
should have figured he'd be on there.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny. This is part of what I really enjoy, actually, about Jamendo, is that as you surf around, there's a little box that will constantly come up with suggestions based on what you've listened to.
If you like this, you'll might like that. It. Yeah.
Yep. In the same way as there's another website called is it Last FM? And Last FM does that, actually. I have a media player on my laptop called Amarok, and it communicates with my Last FM account.
Right.
And anytime I play something, every time I play more than half of a song, it recognizes that, oh, he's actually listening to this song. And it lets Last FM know that. And
right.
Every so often, I'll go to this automatically generated playlist based on what I listen to. And it offers up stuff I've never heard of before, which is kind of cool.
That you like.
That I like. Now, Last FM is not fixated around the Creative Commons, so it is, you know, kind of more mainstream artists, or at least labeled artists. It's not exclusive to that, but that's, you're going to find a lot of that. And that's why I tend to come back over to Jamendo a lot, because I can find, you know, like right here, we're looking at the DJ Spooky. Right. Oh, and this is actually the piece that's on here is specifically a compilation that DJ Spooky did for the One Laptop Per Child project, which has been slightly disappointing of late, but... it kind of got hijacked by some people that had different interests in mind.
Microsoft. Corporate types?
Microsoft.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But we won't go there.
I thought the One Laptop, though, was supposed to run on a Linux.
It was.
Right.
we're just hearing a gar from the other room from Parker, who shares my and our dissatisfaction. Anger, frustration.
Yeah, it should be called Microshaft.
Well, there's a lot of different acronyms for them, guys. But at any rate, yeah, I would suggest that people go and you know, if they're interested in somebody like DJ Spooky, they can have a listen. Now, from what I've heard, this particular album is not necessarily a finished piece as much as it's a lot of samples that you can use to create other stuff.
Right.
So some sort of minimalist drum tracks and various things of that nature.
Well, that's sort of like something he did for Adbusters
a few
years ago.
Yeah.
He took clips of a bunch of different activists.
Yeah.
He had theories from Marshall McLuhan,
right?
Media commentators,
mm-hmm.
Turned them into beats, into anti-commercial,
nice,
anti-copyright,
right,
anti-corporate,
right,
and it came with the magazine free.
Nice. Well, and that's, you see, and this is again, you know, like reinventing new ways of connecting with audience in a way that actually moves forward instead of backwards,
right,
and. Creating value that's not predicated on the bottom line, that there's other things of value in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm all about. I don't make any money. But
right.
It's both a blessing and a curse.
You know, it can also be a little, not self-defeating, but
self-defeating.
Self-destructive.
I would say that I do have a self-destruct streak.
Sure. That, you know, I've never been a really career-oriented artist.
Right. Yep.
You may have noticed.
Yep. Yep. No, and personally, I think that it's part of the reason that we tend to get along on a creative level in some very key ways. As we're talking, I'm just kind of switching over to play some DJ Spooky in the background there.
All right. You're going to use that for the outro?
I will use that for the outro.
And Parker's up at 5.
Yeah. Now we can... finish up. Anything else that other?
I don't know. I think that covers it.
Cool.
Let's listen to some spooky.
We'll listen to some spooky, and we'll be back with you all next week to talk about art, noise, culture, craziness.
We could mention that Full Metal Booty, we're going to be playing.
Right, that's right.
Art Space.
On Monday night, after 7.
After hours.
You'll be able to see us out in the front space. Ooh. So if you're interested, come on down, make some noise, do some movements, or just have a listen and watch.
Yeah, hope to see you there.
Cool. Bye.